warplanes launch airstrikes on the Gaza Strip, hitting targets south of Gaza City. A spokesman for an Iraqi resistance movement said that Iraqi resistance groups are capable of retaliating U.S. attacks. Also coming up, the U.S. budget deficit is forecast to hit $3 trillion in 2021, amounting to one of the biggest imbalances between federal spending and revenue in American history. Welcome to World News. We're live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Thank you very much for joining us. Our top story this hour, the Israeli army has carried out airstrikes on the Gaza Strip, hitting areas south of Gaza City. No casualties have been reported so far. Tel Aviv claims the air raid was in response to Palestinians sending incendiary balloons towards the occupied territories. The strike follows Israel's 11-day aggression against Gaza in May. The conflict ended on May 21st after a ceasefire. Nearly 260 Palestinians, half of them women and children, were killed. Palestinians fired thousands of rockets into Israel in response, killing a dozen people. The spokesman for Iraq's al-Nujaba resistance movement said that Iraq resistance forces are capable of retaliating against the recent U.S. attack on the country's popular mobilization units.
Hajj al-Sha'bi, or the popular mobilization units, try to acquire military equipment that can defend defend their country and can boost the deterrence of their country. That's why Hajj al-Sha'bi is capable right now to retaliate and attain and acquire aerial armament to stand against the American troops. And
Shamari said the recent U.S. attack was a terrorist act. The spokesman urged the United States to withdraw its troops from the country. He noted that the presence of American forces in Iraq is illegal. Last year, Iraqi lawmakers unanimously passed a bill mandating the expulsion of all foreign troops from the country. The spokesman also called on the Iraqi government to take a stronger position against U.S. attacks on PMU forces.
These violations has a number of reasons. The first reason is that the Iraqi government is weak. Now in Iraq, we need to take a real stance to summon the American ambassador and condemn such an act of aggression against the Iraqi sovereignty, and to hold the American government responsible for such a violation of our sovereignty.
Shamari said the United States failed in its attempts to pit Iraq's army against the PMU forces. He added that Washington now wants to take the matters into its own hands and deal a blow to resistance groups. The United States targeted positions of the resistance forces along the Iraqi-Syria border. On Monday, the PMU says four of its members were killed in the airstrikes. And the recent U.S. airstrikes against Iraq's popular mobilization units has once again highlighted Washington's military campaign in the Arab country. During our news review program, we discussed the issue.
And now joining us for the program is Mr. Scott Bennett, former U.S. Army Psychological Warfare Officer from San Francisco, California, and Judith Bellow, senior member at the United National Anti-War Movement, joining us out of Rochester, New York. Hello, and I'd like to welcome you both to the program now. We're going to start with you, Mrs. Bellow. Your thoughts about continued U.S. presence in Iraq and these attacks we see on those popular mobilization forces there on Iraqi and Syrian soil?
Well, I think that, first of all, that the United States strikes Iraq and Syria, actually, because one of the attacks was in Syria, with impunity. And in that sense, it is a terrorist attack. They do it in a violent but and not a well-ordered way. They don't really seem to have any purpose for bombing in the way that they do it. So people are hurt. property is damaged, but not enough so that it's going to stop the thing that they say they're defending against. So they say they're defending against attacks on U.S. bases in Iraq, but what they've done is not going to stop the PMUs from attacking them. And I think it's really important. Sometimes in my mind, I see this as parallel to the battle between Hezbollah and the earlier versions of Hezbollah in the United States when Israel was occupying Lebanon, because they are the United States' role is one of basically just being an instigator rather than being someone, you know, showing any real determination to achieve a particular purpose. And there's no way that this can be defined as a defensive act, because the United States is occupying Iraq. The United States was asked to leave Iraq after Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi Mohandas were murdered a year and a half ago. So the Parliament of Iraq actually asked the United States to leave, and the Prime Minister of Iraq reiterated that they want the United States to leave. So the U.S. is illegally in Iraq, and there is no way that they can call anything that happens to them there as defensive, because they are the offensive party. So this is really one important aspect of what's going on. I think it's also interesting that they timed it at a time which seems to be just, again, an antagonism. So they did it the day after the Iraqi government celebrated 7 years of the PMUs, and after the Iraqi Prime Minister Kadhimi actually celebrated their work and said that the Popular Mobilization Forces, PMFs actually, were the sons of Iraq, that they're part of the Iraqi military and part of the structure of the fabric of Iraqi society. So there's no excuse for the United States bombing them at this point. And I honestly have trouble figuring out what message they might want to send other than we can attack you anytime we want, which is a pretty useless and terrorist message, really. I mean, it isn't a message that has any structure or any value in a negotiation or any other value. It's just an assault.
Thank you, Ms. Bello. Scott, I'd like to welcome you to the program. Mr. Scott Bennett joining us from San Francisco, California. Now, Scott, Ms. Bello actually alluded to her point, speaking about the strange timing. And even more peculiar than that is that we lost Mr. Donald Rumsfeld Donald Rumsfeld. And, pardon. But basically, I mean, that man kind of got driven out of his post back in 06 because of the fact that to a dozen top brass's chagrin, he insisted on going into Iraq. The U.S. was never really supposed to go into Iraq. They sent a bunch of young boys and girls in there to get slaughtered. A bunch of civilians ended up dying, all really for nothing. I mean, a lot of people feel like Saddam Hussein had his hand tied through sanctions, through diplomatic measures. He was basically not even a threat to the U.S. He wasn't al-Qaeda and the Taliban, the two entities that the U.S. was blaming for the 9/11 attacks. But somehow the U.S., with Rumsfeld's lead, went in there, and basically it's still there. It's still there. No one really wants, not U.S. soldiers don't want to be there. A lot of U.S. citizens don't want their kids to be over there. It's wild. So why is our U.S. forces still over there, Scott? Help us out.
Well, you said it extraordinarily well, and I certainly couldn't add to that, but I will try to match your eloquence. This is a tactic that we've seen from Queen Isabella and Valley Springs and down through Disraeli and now to the Queen Biden, the false president, as a distraction operation to try and trigger a harsh reaction by Iran and Iraq to distract the American people, to engage in a war and a conflict. That's what this is all about. This is an attempt to provoke an exchange that can then allow Biden to have more direct access to the U.S. military, which he has been currently cut off from. That's why they're trying to provoke Russia and the Black Sea. That's why they're trying to provoke Iran and Iraq. The Israeli Zionist Mossad, of course, are the ones that are flying drones and attacking U.S. troops, and that knows that. And they simply use that as an excuse to engage in these, not just terrorist attacks, but I would say declarations of war. And they really should be enunciated and diplomatically communicated to the instruments of power around the world as such. And it is an information war. So psychological war means to question the morality of things is to bring the morality of it into the light, where the U.S. has always fallen down and has obscured and run into the shadows of slogans such as human rights and world peace and, you know, counterterrorism, where in fact it has been destabilizing the world with violence, it has been encouraging and funding terrorism, and it has been declaring war ever since 2001.
Mr. Scott Bennett joining us from San Francisco, California, thank you. And Ms. Judith Bellow joining us from Rochester, thank you both. And do stay safe. That's a wrap for the segment of your News Review program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Now, Bahrain's main opposition group has called for the immediate release of all political inmates kept in the Al Khalifa regime's prisons. In a statement issued on Thursday, the Al-Wafaq National Islamic Society noted that the rift between the Manama regime and the people of Bahrain is deep. The group slammed the Al Khalifa regime for using violence against the pro-democracy campaign in the country. It stressed that the right to freedom of expression and peaceful assembly formed the backbone of public demands. Al-Wafaq also demanded the release of former Bahraini lawmaker Osama Tamimi and stressed the need to provide all medical requirements and humanitarian needs for the political prisoner. Bahrain has come under pressure from human rights organizations over prison conditions, including overcrowding, poor sanitation, and a lack of medical care. Political commentator Colin Cavell says there is neither an independent judiciary system nor a fair trial in Bahrain.
The Kingdom of Bahrain, this regime headed up by one family, the Al Khalifa family, there is no democracy that determines how the politics of the country operate. There is no freedom of speech in Bahrain. There is no freedom to believe what you want to believe. The government will dictate what is allowed, what confessions are allowed. There is no freedom of association, nor peaceful assembly. There's no freedom from arbitrary detainment, no due process, no fair trials, no independent judiciary system. What Al-Wafaq is doing today is reminding the world to not forget the political prisoners and those that have been executed in Bahrain, the political prisoners that still remain in Jah prison, that still remain in the holding centers, that still remain in the torture chambers and dungeons of Bahrain, and have to endure hardship every day while standing strong for eventual freedom of the country.
Elsewhere, Iran's envoy to the United Nations Geneva office says the assassination of Iranian Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani is state terrorism. Ismail Baqai Hamaneh said the assassination of General Soleimani, who was a true human rights defender and opponent of Daesh occupation and terrorism, was a barbaric, arbitrary, unjust, and illegal act. He added that the move was an international crime that threatened global peace and security. Baqai noted that Iranian people will never give up seeking justice for the heinous crime. Top Iranian General Soleimani and Iraqi commander Abu Mehdi al-Mohandes were assassinated by U.S. forces near Baghdad in January 2020. The former UN Special Rapporteur, Agnes Callamard, described the US move as arbitrary and against international rules and the UN Charter. The United States says withdrawal of troops from Afghanistan does not mean Washington intends to abandon the country. State Department spokesman Ned Price said the U.S. intends to maintain a diplomatic presence in Kabul. He added that Washington wants to have a continued partnership with the Afghan government and the Afghan people. U.S. President Joe Biden had declared the withdrawal of all American soldiers from Afghanistan by September 11th. The U.S. invaded Afghanistan in 2001 under the pretext of the so-called War on Terror. But despite two decades of presence, the U.S. failed to quell violence and ensure security in the war-torn country. Now, the United States federal deficit this year is projected to hit $3 trillion, one of the highest recorded in American history. The new figure released by the Congressional Budget Office is slightly lower than that of the last year, but three times more than the one in 2019. The Budget Office attributed the rise to the country's response to the COVID-19 pandemic and President Joe Biden's $1.9 trillion coronavirus stimulus package. The federal agency expects the U.S. government to start to earn more revenue after the pandemic ends and the nation returns to normal. Colin Campbell says the U.S. is also facing a rise in inflation.
What we are in trouble of is inflation. And of course, that's happening as we come out of the COVID-19 restrictions, where we saw a plunge in market activity and people buying and selling. And now that that's happening, you have a rush of people wanting certain goods and services, wanting to go out to eat, and the demand rises. Therefore, the supply is probably somewhat suppressed. So we're starting to see price raises in prices contributing to inflation. This is happening not just in the real estate sector, but also in food and dining sectors and travel. And so a lot of people are already grumbling about the feelings of inflation, even though it's not a major topic of conversation here in the U.S. right now.
U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has nominated the members of a special congressional panel probing the January 6th attack on the Capitol building. Former President Donald Trump's prominent critics, including Republican Representative Liz Cheney, are on the list. On January 6th, a mob of Trump supporters stormed the Capitol while Congress was holding sessions to officially certify President Joe Biden's victory in the 2020 presidential race. The attack left five people dead, including a Capitol Police officer. Trump's critics say his incendiary remarks during a speech on the same day encouraged his supporters to storm Congress. And that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour, but don't go away.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
limelight.
Without the whole world paying close attention to such crimes, the very idea of our humanity is at risk, says Hamid Dabashi, author, in an article published under the heading Tulsa Massacre: Why We Need to Remember the Darkest Chapters of U.S. History. Stay tuned for more. So why would we not know about the Tulsa Massacre? What has gone wrong in the American educational system that we would have been denied such an iconic piece of historical literacy, which would have significantly altered the reading of the rest of the country's history? The Tulsa Race Massacre took place between May 31st and June 1st, 1921, when armed mobs of white people attacked black residents and destroyed homes and businesses in the Greenwood district of Tulsa, Oklahoma. The massacre is not exactly a secret of the U.S. history. Scholars such as late Howard Zinn were particular in detailing the hidden horrors of American history, including the Tulsa Massacre. In his widely popular A People's History of the United States in 1980, Zinn gave an entirely iconoclastic version of U.S. history, concentrating on the factual but forgotten violence at the root of the American Republic. Many other scholars have closely examined the massacre. Tim Madigan's seminal book, The Burning, in 2001, is a solid piece of scholarship and a compelling narrative detailing the massacre. The kind of historiography that Zinn and scores of other American historians represent is akin to what emerged in India as subaltern studies paying detailed attention to the unwritten or else forgotten events in history and requiring a series of reconsideration of both the archival and the analytical tools for deciphering the past. There is a serious gap between the body of scholarship produced on the detailed American history, particularly the stories of Native Americans and African Americans, and what make it to popular venues such as Hollywood or the U.S. educational system. That educational system is itself under systematic attack by white supremacists who dismiss all critical thinking as woke culture or cancel culture, as they did with the term multiculturalism just a few years earlier, and thus demonize and dismiss the underlying critical thinking. Right now, even the idea of critical race theory, the systematic study of racism in the U.S., has become a subject of ignorant attack by reactionary propagandists and politicians determined to sustain a white supremacist mythology of the American past. American history is not just American history. No national history ever is. It is part and parcel of world history. Because of the enormous power of the U.S. in the world politics, not by virtue of any moral authority, but by virtue of its sheer destructive power that is always globally on display, this history requires a critical assessment far beyond American borders. Events such as the Tulsa Race Massacre are integral to the racist underpinnings of American political culture, which manifests itself domestically in equally horrid events such as the Wounded Knee Massacre of 1890, or else globally in infamous incidents such as the 1968 My Lai Massacre in Vietnam or the 2003 Fallujah Massacre in Iraq. crimes such as these, or war crimes such as the Zionist regime's slaughter of Palestinians, or the Saudi Emirati genocidal attacks in Yemen, are not only important to African Americans, Iraqis, Palestinians, or Yemenis. As the Zionist regime is being held accountable at the International Criminal Court, ICC, so must be the U.S. and any other country responsible for crimes against humanity. The terrors that the successive U.S. and Canadian governments have perpetrated against indigenous peoples through systems such as residential schools are the same magnitude. These are crimes against the whole humanity. Without the whole world paying close attention to them, the very idea of our humanity is at risk of wanton cruelties of an identical nature, but from a different angle. For any criminal atrocity that happens anywhere in the world, the perpetrators must be made fully aware that the whole world is watching them. For this very reason, in 1964, Malcolm X proposed taking the case of the injustices systematically perpetrated against African Americans to the UN. According to the New York Times, the black nationalist leader started his campaign on July 17th in Cairo, where the 33 heads of independent African states held their second meeting since the Organization of African Unity was founded in Addis Ababa 14 months ago. Ideas such as Russell Tribunal, named after the prominent British philosopher Bertrand Russell, or the institutions such as the ICC, alongside historical precedents such as the Nuremberg Trials, all point to ways that such crimes against humanity have been brought to global attention, if not to justice. Everyone from reactionary racists to liberal Hollywood personalities may oppose or advocate for a more critical assessment of American history. But countries such as the U.S., regimes like the fake regime of Israel, Saudi Arabia, and the UAE have not just committed crimes against one people or another, they have inflicted wounds on the very idea of our humanity, and they must be held accountable. The world must know about the Tulsa Race Massacre of 1921 in the United States, just as it must know about the genocide the Belgians committed in Congo under Leopold II, or what the French did in Africa, the Italians in Libya, or the British in India. There is a structural link between the domestic and foreign acts of mass violence perpetrated by countries such as the U.S., or its European allies. The crimes against humanity underlying such atrocities defy all ideological formations and political positions. Something far more precious is being lost at the very heart of the suffering, our shared humanity.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and here is an interesting saying from Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Raza, peace be upon him. This world is a prison for a true believer, and a paradise for the unbeliever.
of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily around the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 15:20 to 16:20 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz, every day from 19:20 to 20:20 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat, or BAT 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism. This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by famous Iranian Shiite orator and lecturer, Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned.
عمل به دین کار سختی نیست. امام رضا علیه السلام فرمود اگر کسی موقع آب خوردن یاد جدم حسین بیفته کان کمل.
Practicing the religion of Allah is not a difficult task.
Imam Ar-Ridha alayhi salam states, if someone, when drinking the glass of water, recalls my forefather, Imam al-Hussein, he or she is like the companion of Imam al-Hussein, who was martyred on the desert of Karbala. This sentence of Imam al-Ridha means that such a person is in the camp of Imam al-Hussein. This remembrance of Imam al-Hussein is not a difficult task. Once, an Arab came to Prophet Muhammad in the mosque and asked the Prophet of Allah to teach him the Holy Quran. The Holy Prophet asked one of his learned companions to teach the Arab man the Quran. After a while, the companion of the Prophet came to him and said, "The Arab man whom you ordered me to teach the Quran was lazy and left the teaching session soon." Prophet Muhammad asked, "What happened?" The companion said, "I started teaching him the Holy Quran by reciting a short surah of the Holy Quran, Surah Al-Zalzala."
رسیدم به آیه آخری که فمن یعمل مثقال ذره خیرا یره و من یعمل مثقال ذره شرا یره. اگر کسی بنده
When I reached the last verses of this surah, it says, "So whoever does an atom's weight of good will see it, and whoever does an atom's weight of evil will see it." The Arab man stopped me from further teaching and asked, "Was what you read the verse of the Holy Quran?" And my response was positive. Upon hearing this, the Arab man said, "If what you recited to me was the ayah of the Holy Quran, that would be sufficient for me." And then he left. I think he was very much lazy. Upon hearing this, the Holy Prophet told his companion, "He left you while he became knowledgeable." From this story, we understand that upon hearing only one ayah of the Holy Quran, a person can reach the deep recognition of Allah. As the Holy Prophet stated, that simple Arab man got the gist of religion of Allah and left. Thus, practicing the religion and reaching the proximity of Allah is not a difficult task. Sometimes it only needs a pure intention and thoughts. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care. Fi amanallah.
Digital Art Museum in the Japanese capital has unveiled a stunning exhibition offering visitors an intimate interaction with nature. One of the attractions of the show is Floating Flower Garden, which is a mirrored room filled with 13,000 orchid flowers. The orchids are dangling from the ceiling and move up once a visitor walks through in the space and approaches the flowers. Once the visitors move past the flowers, descend again. This makes the visitors able to freely wander around the three-dimensional flower mass space. Tokyo-based digital art group Team Lab that runs this exhibition says the artwork is designed to help people think that they are part of the garden.
This is an installation filled with these flowers. As you walk towards them, the flowers slowly move up to create an area of space for you. Surrounded so completely by flowers, you feel immersed in the flowers, the garden itself.
There are several other installations in this exhibition. One is an outdoor piece filled with Ovid sculptures that light up after the sun sets. Visitors can see 61 different colors of light in this section. When one of the Ovids tipped over by a hand or the wind, it emits a sound. The sound is then echoed by the surrounding Ovids. In a school in the Ukrainian capital, kids learn about saving the environment and helping those in need through a creative way. Students put plastic bottles in a machine as currency. Then they can select what they would like to spend money on. Buying food for stray animals and donating to children with special needs are some of the choices. The project was first launched in a mall in Kiev a few months ago. Afterwards, the designers found out that children were the most frequent users of this machine.
A child drops a bottle inside and sees an immediate result. It brings joy and happiness, and everyone is excited and wants the project to thrive.
The founders seek to install more and more machines in schools across Ukraine to raise environmental awareness among younger generations. Since the start of the project in October last year, over 5 tons of plastic has been collected from 6 machines.
India is known not only for its cultural diversity, but also for a vibrant assortment of uncountable dishes. Butter chicken is the only one delight you wouldn't like to miss while visiting Indian restaurants, especially if it is prepared by a celebrity chef like Saransh Goyla. Goyla's coal-fired oven is now sending a mouth-watering scent through India's commercial hub Mumbai as the young chef takes a break from COVID-19 relief efforts and resumes work. He is the one who established the first global butter chicken brand and authored the acclaimed food travelogue India on My Platter. But with the coronavirus forcing people into isolation, his networks were also hit. So Goyla launched a non-profit platform called COVID Meals for India in April to connect thousands of volunteer home cooks and frontline workers.
The pandemic had a large impact on our business. Having said that, Goyla Butter Chicken from the start was always focused on deliveries and takeaway. So in that sense, our loss of revenue and a loss of business was slightly lesser than an average restaurant. But a lot of my friends, restaurateurs who are in this industry have gone through an extremely tough time. The pandemic has taken its toll on our industry, and I think it has set us back by at least a couple of years.
Goyla found his calling early, winning a televised cooking competition at the age of 25, which led him to host a travel program showcasing regional Indian cuisine. His profile exploded in 2018 when he was invited by former MasterChef Australia judge George Kalambaris to be a guest on the hit show, with contestants asked to recreate his signature dish.
Graduation is an exciting moment for all schoolgoers, but the occasion turns more joyful if it ends with a celebration like Scarlet Sales Festival, which is held in St. Petersburg in Russia at the end of the school year. The annual event is part of the famous White Nights Festival, traditionally held in summer, with spectacular fireworks, numerous music concerts, and a massive water show. Normally, thousands of domestic and foreign tourists flock to the city to watch the colorful event. But this year, the COVID-19 pandemic limited the number of the attendees. The festival began in the 1960s when several Russian schools united to celebrate the end of the academic year. That is in connection with the symbolism of the popular 1922 children's book, Scarlet Sails, by Alexander Grimm. Indonesia is dealing with a surge in coronavirus infections, but that has not stopped the people from observing the Yatnya Kasada Festival. Thousands of people braved the climb to the summit of Mount Bromo in eastern Java province to observe the ancient ritual. They made offerings ranging from fruits and crops to livestock by throwing the items to the pit of an active volcano. They believe the practice brings blessings and plenitude and helps them express gratitude for what they have. This year's festival was overshadowed by the coronavirus pandemic, with participants required to adhere to strict health protocols. China's space agency has released videos of its first Mars rover as it's exploring the red planet's surface. The rover is named Zhurong. It's now investigating a vast plane known as Utopia Planitia on Mars's northern hemisphere. The rover successfully landed on Mars in mid-May. It is studying the red planet's surface rocks and atmosphere. It also looks for signs of life, including any subsurface water or ice. The solar-powered Chinese robot weighs around 240 kilograms and has 6 wheels. China is the second country after the U.S. to operate a rover on Mars. A university in the Venezuelan capital Caracas has turned its roof into a garden and uses sustainable energy to light up its classes. The roof of Andres Bello Catholic University is covered with plants and 30 solar panels. The panels, along with a wind turbine, produce the 7,400 watts of electricity to illuminate that area and light 2 rooms in the building. The roof is now functioning as a self-sufficient and environmentally friendly open-air classroom. The proposal for the project was put forward by 2 students. The aim is to educate people about renewable energy and the threat of climate change.
A small New Hampshire town has been hit by a series of car break-ins over the last few weeks. People were shocked when they finally discovered the mischievous criminal. A large black bear has been identified as the bandit wreaking havoc in the town of Thornton. The naughty mammal was caught on camera as it got on its 2 hind legs and skillfully opened the door of a car. Police say the bear was most likely rummaging for food. Authorities have asked people to remove food from their cars to avoid enticing the troublesome animal. A Jordanian woman is receiving high demands for the soap she produces. Why? Because she uses an unusual ingredient. Lara Altiti makes soap out of camel milk. She tours different cities in Jordan to find the best camel farms for her business. Titi uses camel milk as the major ingredient for the soap she produces. That's because she says it has rich benefits and contains more vitamins than cow milks.
The first stage includes weighing the soap, and I include different kinds of oil to preserve the quality of the soap and its therapeutic benefit. We need to have high foam and tough consistency, and we don't want it to be rancid. We place high importance on the therapeutic material that we add during the production process.
Titi started her soap line at home using a manual process and then expanded it to an independent workshop. Her soap line has now become very popular in Jordan. Titi produces more than 4,000 soap bars a month. She tells them, sells them both to domestic and international customers.
If you're a car lover, this story is for you. Over 300 classic vehicles have taken part in a retro rally across Estonia. The 1,000-kilometer rally kicked off in the town of Perde. It drew participants from Latvia and Finland. Their motto is Straight Ahead to the Past. The vintage cars participated in the event are mostly produced between 1930 and 1980. Experts say all the vehicles are in good condition. However, they doubt if all the vehicles can make it to the end of the five-day rally.
German firm's electric air taxi takes its first flight at a show in an airport near the French capital, Paris. Volocopter's flying taxi, which looks like a tiny helicopter, took off and landed vertically over the airport with no passenger on board during a three-minute trial. Aside from its two-passenger capacity, the aircraft also has some room for luggage. It flew a 500-meter route at speeds of up to 30 kilometers per hour and 30 meters high along the airfield. The flying taxi service would first be operated by a licensed pilot, but the flight would be fully automated over a period of time.
With respect to regulation, initially we will have a fully certified, fully licensed helicopter pilot, just to fit into existing regulation. But we believe over time it can be much simpler to obtain such an operating license for a volocopter. And of course, in the last instance, we want to take a pilot requirement out and we want these vehicles to fly fully automated. So you will not need a pilot license anymore. You can just summon the volocopter, it will come and pick you up and bring you safely to your destination.
The German firm is entering the urban mobility market with high hopes of playing a major role in the infant industry. Volocopter says its objective is to have a service in operation for 2024 for the 2024 Olympic Games. Walking around the city without shoes can be delightful. If you're interested in the experience, visit the Russian capital. A 3.5-kilometer long barefoot trail has recently opened in Moscow's Elk Island Park. It's made of various materials such as pine bark, beach pebbles, and clay. Taking around 40 minutes to complete, the path attracts hundreds of visitors every day. However, some people find it difficult to walk without shoes, calling the path a torture trail. A zoo in Turkey has welcomed a baby elephant from an endangered species. The birth of a female calf at Izmir Wildlife Park has caused excitement in keepers and visitors. The calf, yet to be named, is the third offspring of parents from Asian species. The International Union for the Conservation of Nature classifies the Asian elephant as endangered due to their rapid decline in the wild. The Asian elephants are primarily threatened by poaching, fragmentation, and loss and degradation of habitat. Currently, around 20 to 40,000 Asian elephants are living across the world, five of which inhabiting Turkey's Izmir Zoo.
A Palestinian artist has come up with the idea of making children feel happy after the recent Israeli aggression on the besieged Gaza Strip left many people dead. Amna Sami is a young Palestinian artist who has gathered Palestinian kids in the city of Beit Lahia, north of Gaza. That's where houses were destroyed by Israeli airstrikes and bombings during the recent aggression on the territory. Sami draws the Palestinian flag as well as the map of Palestine on children's cheeks as patriotic symbols. She says she does that to say that these people in the midst of destruction will become strong again. Sami says by painting on kids' faces, she wants to send a message to the world.
I'm sending a message to the world that our children should live like other children in the world, away from danger and destruction. It is their right in life to live as children in a safe place, a place that gives them something to live a normal life.
Palestinian kids say they feel happy when Sami paints their faces. The Israeli regime launched its devastating onslaught on Gaza in early May. At least 256 Palestinians, including 66 children, were killed during the 11-day war. A Turkish band has found musical inspiration in a most unlikely place, a local landfill. Here's more. Members of Funk Istanbul have assembled instruments from the dump in a junkyard in Istanbul. They use their ingenious new tools to play Turkish folk music. The band aims to raise awareness about recycling. Turkey is one of the biggest producers of municipal waste globally. The country has a low recycling rate. Only 12% of waste is repurposed there.
The bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure. IRIB English Radio.
The limelight.
Hopes have been raised of summer holidays in Europe for fully vaccinated Britons as a deal with Brussels on COVID passports neared completion and Germany failed to convince popular destinations to put an emergency brake on UK visitors. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian columnists Daniel Buffy and Sam Jones. The piece is titled UK and Brussels near deal on COVID passports to boost holiday hopes. Hopes have been raised of summer holidays in Europe for fully vaccinated Britons as a deal with Brussels on COVID passports neared completion and Germany failed to convince popular destinations to put an emergency brake on UK visitors. Restrictions on travel are tightening across the European continent for tourists coming from the United Kingdom who have not had two jabs, owing to concerns over the highly transmissible Delta variant of the coronavirus now dominant in Britain. Portugal announced on Monday, 28th of June, that people unable to prove full vaccination status would face 14 days in quarantine. Spain's Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez said Britons travelling to the Balearic